Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 22nd of February. This hour of the program, we'll have two state senators joining us, one a Democrat who is in Illinois and one a Republican who is in Madison. State Senator Lena Taylor, Democratic State Senator from Milwaukee, representing Wisconsin's 4th District, will be with us. And Randy Hopper, Republican State Senator from Fond du Lac, representing Wisconsin's 18th District. Today, the assembly will be in session honoring the Green Bay Packers. I understand they will not be taking up voter ID today, although that may be something that's not right. We'll find out from our state senators what's going to be on the docket for today. The state's Democratic state senators are in 14 of them in Illinois. Still, the governor is giving what he is calling a fireside chat, although that term has been used. We should probably call it something else by someone else. And everything is pretty much in a deadlock. There are still protests in Madison. There are people who feel entirely differently about this issue. Our phone lines are already filled, which shows the amount of public concern and interest in this issue. And we're going to get rolling. If you want to join our conversation, our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. We have a Facebook page. You can use that as well. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. People have been using that to leave comments. State Senator Lena Taylor is joining us now from Illinois, Democratic State Senator, who's been in Illinois for, 6 days now? It's about the sixth day. State Senator Lena Taylor, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. I was listening to Talk of the Nation yesterday afternoon, and Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under Bill Clinton, was saying that what this is really about is a power situation, that we're into a different universe. The 2008 Great Recession is what has changed everything, driven down state revenues. And if you talk about taking away bargaining rights of public employees, you're just in a different universe. Would you like to comment?
I agree. I do agree that I agree with that, but I also agree that fiscally we are in a place where we need unions to do different and to have different concessions. And I just believe, as leaders, the individuals who have been elected, that it's our job to try to consist this bill and build, bring people together. And the person whose job that is the governor's. It's the governor's job to go to the table and to negotiate with Wisconsin workers and not to stick his head in the sand and refuse to do what he asked to do in December, which was negotiate the contracts with them.
So where do you stand on this right now? The public employees have said okay on pension and health care reform. Are you asking the governor to give on bargaining rights of public employees on salary and on working conditions?
I'm asking the governor to not take away workers' rights. I'm asking the governor to not take away a tradition that's been more than 50 to 100 years in Wisconsin that the nation then followed and even internationally people have followed. I'm asking him to do his job and go to the table and do what he asked to do, which was to negotiate with those workers.
He, in his address last night at a press conference, said that we're going to lose a great deal of money by Friday of this week in terms of the financial deal that was worked out with the government to delay payments. If indeed Friday comes and that happens, he suggested that there could be as many as 1,500 layoffs, although he didn't say when that could happen. Do you think that there is truth in that? And the second part of my question is, we haven't seen the budget yet, but it strikes me that there are probably, because of the budget to come, going to be many, many layoffs of public employees all over the state.
As a matter of fact, I wish that the governor would go on and reveal his budget so that individuals would be able to see that what you just said is more than likely correct, and you can, you know, assume that to some degree the trends that have existed previously from Republicans in regards to cuts in education and so on and so forth. But first part of your question regarding the alternatives that the governor has provided, I will say that when we sat on finance, that very question was asked, whether or not those are the only alternatives. even Director Lyon from the Fiscal Bureau stated that there are other alternatives, sure, that could be done. But we all know that there are other alternatives that could be done. Those are the only alternatives he's willing, his administration, have been willing to consider. And it's, you know, suggesting that the only thing that they can do is do layoffs. Truly, the concessions that the unions have provided, those concessions would give him what's needed in order to be able to move forward and to help the budget. In addition to that, you know, there are some places, I'm certain, that there could be a cut, you know, in spending. And so regardless of that, the delay in payments that he mentioned, I believe that that may not be completely accurate, just like his budget repair bill is not accurate. It didn't meet the statutory triggers in order for us to have a budget repair bill. So I questioned, as well as he said originally, that collective bargaining would be intact. And although the Journal Sentinel is sometimes very challenged with reporting the truth, there's no question that they were able to show that it wasn't true, that collective bargaining rights were going to be challenged. And so that's what this is about. People have already, before the governor did his budget repair bill, the teachers union agreed to his concessions, and afterwards the correction officers and those from AFSCME agreed to the concessions that he wants. So those things fix the budget, but this has never been about the budget. This has been about him wanting to take his special interest group, the Koch brothers, and, you know, do their bidding to bus unions, which is what their website shows.
He said that the collective bargaining, though, was part of the equation. In his speech yesterday, his press conference, he was talking about a change in what kind of healthcare company public employees, teachers would be using. We could save, he said, $68 million as one of the many examples. Maybe he'll talk about more tonight, that they're dealing with the certain trust for healthcare reform. And if they had another company providing that service, we could save $68 million.
You know, the governor won. They gave concessions. So if the governor came to the table and said, will you do X? You know, we need to close the parameters to this. We need to do X, Y, and Z, at least coming to the table. The last I knew, whether it's in a marriage or relationship or whether you're the governor and it's the workers of Wisconsin, you need to communicate and you need to sit at the table and do it. And you can't, you know, be mad over, you know, well, we weren't able to do it on day X or day Y or day Z. You know, they did it before you did the budget repair bill, and they've done it after you've done the budget repair bill. So whether it is the health care piece, because I think there's legitimacy to that. However, you can't do it if you refuse to come to the table. And on a morning talk show this morning with Joe, the governor stated he's not asked them to come to the table. He's not gone to the table with them. He said before he's not going to compromise. Well, you at least should go to the table. It's your job. He keeps talking about us not doing our job. He needs to do his job. It's not about the legislators. We're only standing on the Constitution of Wisconsin, which requires a quorum. We're standing on the Constitution so that the people of Wisconsin can know all of what's in this bill, including a no-bid contract that could go to potentially, I guess, the Koch brothers. I'm not sure.
The mayor yesterday, and you represent Milwaukee, was talking about police and firefighters and benefits, pension and health care for those groups taking up a huge percentage of the Milwaukee budget. Can you talk about why police and firefighters were not on the included in all of this, if they should have been, and the fact that they're not, what it will be doing for city budgets like Milwaukee?
First of all, for city budgets, it is huge. I think of $240 million or something, 230 of it, or if it's 230, it's 220. I can't remember the exact figure right now, and I don't have it in front of me, of the money that is collected by the city of Milwaukee is used for police and fire. So it's a huge portion of their budget. So when we were on finance and they were telling me about one small piece, nominal piece, that had been done for the mayor, I asked if they had considered doing the piece that would help the most, like what we're talking about now. Of course, there was no real answer to that issue. So, you know, in the long run, I think any municipality is going to be highly affected by police and fire. And although I know that the governor says he did it for safety reasons, is what he says, one could argue that the correction officers or would be the same. I know he states he's going to bring the National Guard in for them. But he likes to demonize the teachers, but in the same breath, he must have not noticed the firefighters who came and marched with the teachers and the more than 300, you know, 1,000 individuals, more than a quarter of a million people who had come to the Capitol last that I knew. And since then, people have continued. So it's still counting. You know, this is a huge issue, and I think the governor should listen to the constituents of the state.
We're going to listen to people of the state in just a moment. What are your plans and your Democratic colleagues in Illinois right now? What are your plans for the week, Senator Taylor?
The same things that we've been doing, constituent emails and contacts and making sure that we get the message out about this is not about a budget repair. This is about busing unions. This is about taking individuals' rights is what it is. This really has been done in a way that goes against democracy and giving people an opportunity to be heard. And I think the piece that, you know, that we're going to continue to do is to try to, you know, we've been able to slow this down so that individuals can learn. And that's been our number one priority in order to be able to do that. And we're hoping, whether it's a senator, or whether it is the governor, that someone will choose to listen to the constituents and choose to listen to Wisconsin workers and choose to do what we need to do for the budget, but to not take people's rights.
Let's go to phone calls. Alan is our first caller. Hi, Alan.
Hello. Hello, Senator. I like what
Hi,
you guys are doing.
Where
Just
are you
stay
from?
Out as long as you can.
Where are you from, Alan?
Another thing is I got a question on, you know, you're going to cut all these state workers' wages and stuff. And how will it be when you, like the Republicans, how is it going to be for them, for the wages when you're doing it, you know, and how are they going to deal with them workers in the office? It might be a big hornet's nest, wouldn't it be?
Well, you know, there's no question that there's so many you know, other things that can happen because of the choices that the governor is making. So, Alan, that's possible. And the thing that I think I want to see from our governor is for him to lead, for him to not do things that will divide the state in the way that he is dividing the state. He can accomplish the task that he's doing without destroying the fabric of Wisconsin in the way that we think. And so that's probably, I think, the largest lesson that I think needs to be in this.
He was talking yesterday, Senator Taylor, about the money that was coming to the state for federal stimulus. And he said that it was not used for stimulus in the state, that it was used to plug the gap in Medicaid reimbursement. What do you say to that? Is that true?
A few things. Based on the question that I asked during finance, and anyone could see that on Wisconsin Eye, the question that I asked during finance, it would basically allow for the rate that we get paid at, for lack of a better way to say it, in some ways to be increased. And so there is an issue of that is a benefit that we would have. I find it amazing that the same governor who gave away $810 million for high-speed rail gave away dollars for an internet. I can't remember the exact thing now, but we were the only state.
High-speed internet, yeah.
Yes, to give away the dollars in that sense. And I'll never forget when I drove in Senator Vinehouse's district and Senator Kopanky's district, how my cell phone didn't function the same way, and how I learned that Senator Vinehout could not even connect her laptop up in Madison the same way I could in Milwaukee. So those are important issues that need to be addressed, and those dollars that he gave up, the only state in the nation that gave up those dollars, were going to help schools. And I think in the end, it's right that we need to have those dollars. I don't disagree, but I find it amazing that the governor, who gave away much more, right, that he now wants to, you know, turn the tide and say, ooh, you know, you need to come back by Friday. I don't know that that is correct, that the deadline is Friday. I don't know that we can't get an extension or a waiver. I don't know any of those things yet, but we are looking into those questions.
Alan, thanks for the call. Alan was calling from Caston. Kurt in Kenosha, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. This is such a frustrating effort. It's tough to stop, not run off of the mouth, so I'm going to do my best. Everything stinks about this bill. It's a fanatical, undemocratic effort to push through legislation in 3 days, which would have happened had the heroic Democratic senators not done what you'd done. And it's kind of funny to me how the cries of "they didn't read the bill" echoed last year when a year-long process for the health care, a three-day process for changing labor rules in Wisconsin, that doesn't get any Tea Party either. That's just kind of funny. But the main point is the unfairness and fanatical of this bill. For instance, the Kenosha, it says that this is needed so local governments can negotiate with the unions or with the local workers. Well, here in Kenosha, we just had a city resolution saying we can work with the unions and down with this bill.
Okay, let's get a response. Senator Taylor.
Wow. It's so nice to know that the local municipalities are doing such resolutions. I can't wait to tell Senator Wirch. And we appreciate your support, and we appreciate just that really is encouraging. Thank you.
We do want to tell you that we have a call in to Governor Walker, and we urge him to appear on our statewide network. We haven't heard from him yet. We did put a call in to Mayor Tom Barrett, who will join us on Thursday's program, and Margaret Farrow, former Republican Lieutenant Governor, will also be with us. That will be on Thursday's show tomorrow. There is so much going on in the Middle East with Libya and Bahrain that we thought we needed to concentrate on that part of the world, so we will do that tomorrow. Thanks, Kurt, for your call. Mary is next from Brookfield. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. And Senator Taylor, I want to thank you so much for what you and the rest of the heroic 14, as you're called, are doing. Please, with all affection, stay away as long as you can. My question goes to the portion of the bill that allegedly or supposedly gives away no-bid contracts to the Koch brothers. Could you elaborate on that with regard to, I think, power plants and whatnot, which essentially Scott Walker seems to be wanting to sell the state to his billionaire friends who have given him over $43,000.
You know, I'm so glad to hear you. Thank you so much for your call, because those are issues that definitely need to be looked into fully. What we know for sure is that the fourth largest contributor for our governor was the Koch brothers. What we know for sure is on the Koch brothers' website that you will see the things, unless they take it down, because I've been talking about it and talked about it on national TV now, that they have talked about union busting and that this is their effort. They, of course, funded the Tea Party. And so as the governor talks about individuals coming in from other states to stand with workers of Wisconsin, or how individuals dismiss individuals in Egypt saying that they support Wisconsin workers, it's no question that the Koch brothers' interests are being carried by the governor, his fourth largest contributor. Now, the part that I've not been able to check yet is to confirm all of the kind of business interests that the Koch brothers have and whether those align with the power plants. It's my understanding that they do have those kind of interests, and as a result, it's kind of bizarre, right, coincidental, that our governor has put in a no-bid contract. What does that mean? That means that they can just give it to them. And in this bill, as well as the other bills that happen in the no-jobs special session, because no job was created in the special session, it was all symbolism. So the symbolism in this bill is that a third of it has non-fiscal issues, and some of those non-fiscal issues are direct it looks like favors to their special interest friends who are out of state and are trying to influence the Wisconsin way and destroy nearly 100 years of tradition in Wisconsin. And I don't believe that that's acceptable. And if we had not left the state, I don't believe that Wisconsinites would even know that that exists in there. You know, and there are other issues similar to that type of thing. There's a third of the items in the 144-page bill that do not have any direct correlation with the state budget.
Senator Taylor, as you well know, Democrats went down to a rousing defeat in November in the legislature, in the Assembly, in the Senate. We have a Republican governor. Here's an email from Sharon who says, Governor Walker says the protesters don't hold sway over the business that 5.5 million people of Wisconsin elected him to do.
Well, a couple of things. The first is, of course, I know what happened in the elections. I'm no longer the chair of judiciary, and I sit in the inner ring instead of the outer ring. I know what happened. However, that election doesn't say that we now have a government of one. Governor Walker has been overreaching since he's been there. He overreached, and my Republican colleagues have rubber stamped what he wanted in many places. They've overreached and allowed him to overreach into reviewing judicial decisions. You know, he should not be able to do that. There are three branches of government, and there's a separation of power for a reason, for accountability. Then they've given up their power and their responsibility to hold him accountable because they know that he's supposed to, he asked to do the contracts. They should be standing up and saying, you need to sit down and you need to negotiate the contracts. And people will say, well, it'll take 18 months and it'll take a long time to negotiate the contract and we don't have that time and so on and so forth. You know, he's the governor won. They've given him the concession. He doesn't have to take their rights. And I think, you know, I think that's sad. And I think it's sad that he won't come on your show and he won't come on this radio station and he won't do what he needs to do in order to be heard by the people of Wisconsin.
He should come on this station. You're absolutely right.
He should.
Yeah.
And I think it's a shame that he won't listen. He won't come to the table. He won't come to the station. He won't listen to the people. They tried to cut off the people's ability to be heard. This is unacceptable. From a governor who's supposed to be a leader and from a legislature that's supposed to hold him accountable.
Thank you, Mary, for your call. John in Grand Rapids, Wisconsin. Hi, John.
Good morning. I'm just wondering, the governor has accused me of being in a coma because I wasn't aware that he was going to take collective bargaining rights away. And by the way, I've been emailing him for about 10 or 11 days and trying to call him. His emails return undeliverable, and his phone bank is full. And now I notice the legislative hotline phone number has been disconnected. But in what speech did the governor say, what public speech besides to his cronies, did he ever talk about collective bargaining and getting rid of it in Wisconsin?
I love your question. Thank you. Let me start by first saying I ran against the governor when for county executive in his last reelection bid. And I did about 24 dual appearances with him. And he's a nice guy. And he's, you know, cool and collected. And what I know is that the governor lied. And I remember when he said that he wasn't going to be running for governor. And as soon as he got done winning county executive, guess what he did? Started his campaign up for running for governor. The governor said that collective bargaining rights were not challenged in this particular piece of legislation, and the Journal Sentinel caught him with his pants on fire. You know, I am telling you that he never said, and I like clarity. All my colleagues in both houses almost now tease me about I always say for clarity. Because I believe that you need to have open and clear communication. And I believe in being honest and transparent and upfront. And what the governor did not do at any point is tell people when he was running for office that he was going to take their rights. He didn't tell them that. He didn't tell the workers of Wisconsin, whose backs our state is built on, that he was going to take their rights. And if he had, then those individuals who are now saying that they're sorry that they endorsed him they wouldn't be saying that. Those individuals who said they voted conservative and they voted for him and that they feel he's overreached and he's gone too far and that he shouldn't take people's rights, they wouldn't be saying that. And in regards to the poll that they say that's out there, I want everyone to know that that poll is a national poll. And the questions that were asked are questionable, as well as the process that was used. But there are polls that I'm certain somebody has to do and needs to do a poll in-state, because in-state, the last poll that I heard about said that Wisconsinites agree that people should have their rights. And so this governor didn't say that. And that's why his numbers are going down in the polls.
State Senator
don't agree.
Lena Taylor, thank you very much for being with us.
I appreciate the time to allow us to be heard, and you have a great day.
Thanks, you too. State Senator Lena Taylor on the Joint Finance Committee, one of the 14 Democrats who is in Illinois right now. She represents Wisconsin's 4th District, which is in Milwaukee. State Senator Randy Hopper will be joining us momentarily, a Republican state senator from Fond du Lac representing Wisconsin's 18th District. We'll continue with your phone calls and with your emails in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us this part of the program, State Senator Randy Hopper, Republican State Senator from Fond du Lac, representing Wisconsin's 18th District. State Senator Randy Hopper, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, tell me what's on the agenda for today, sir.
Well, The members of the Republican caucus are in the state capitol. We will be having a caucus meeting at 10 o'clock, and then we'll be planning on going to the floor and continuing to conduct the state's business.
Mm-hmm.
We can conduct business that doesn't have a fiscal component to it. As certainly you and your audience are aware, we're unable to do that unless we have a quorum of 20 senators. We have 19 members in our caucus, and we all know that your last guest and her colleagues are hiding out in Illinois someplace.
Mm-hmm. With no indication that they're coming back anytime soon.
Oh, no. I spoke to Senator Taylor on Sunday. She gave me a call. Senator Taylor and I, although we have politically polar opposite views, are good friends. And I wanted to make sure that she was doing all right.
Well, that's good to hear.
And she called to check on me, and I, make sure her son's doing all right, and I'm sure he misses his mother. And so, even though we don't agree politically, we are trying to forge ahead with the idea that even though we disagree, we don't need to be disagreeable. And so, so we talked. In fact, I even offered to give her a ride to work, but she declined.
We need a little bit of humor in all of this, don't we, even though it may be short-lived. All right, tell me, part of what we were talking about last half hour, of course, is public employees have decided to give concessions. Why isn't that enough?
Well, I think that that's a good point, because one of the arguments made on the side of my colleagues who are in Illinois is that they ought to strip the collective bargaining component out of this bill because this is a budget repair bill. And you've heard them say that repeatedly, that it doesn't have a fiscal component to
right.
our state's future. Well, let me ask you and ask your audience, if it could be stripped out and voted on as non-fiscal, and they're in Illinois to block it being voted because it is fiscal, how does that make any sense? The fact is that the concessions on the health care and the pension are a drop in the bucket to what the collective bargaining components mean to the local municipalities, the school districts, in terms of fiscal effect. Governor talked about a couple of those yesterday. I want to just bring one of them up
sure. As
a for instance. Through collective bargaining, WEAC, the teachers union, requires certain school districts to use the WEA trust for their health benefits. The union leadership benefits from the school districts that use the WEA trust. Now, if that component were stripped out and the school districts weren't required to use WEA trust, and say they just went to the regular state health care plan that legislators and other state hardworking employees are on, that would save the school districts up to $68 million a year. That's one component. I'll give you one other one. Through collective bargaining, the Department of Corrections employee union can a member can call in sick on any on a day, and so they've called in sick, and then they can end up working another shift on that very same day that they called in sick, and receive overtime pay for the other shift that they're not working on. Now, that was collectively bargained. That cost the state $4.8 million last year. Now, you know, around here, people talk about the numbers in terms of, well, that's only $4.8 million. You're looking at a $137 million deficit this last biennium, and you're looking at $3 billion next time. Listen, $4.8 million is a lot of money. And when are we going to finally say that, you know what, it doesn't matter how little it is, it's important that we get a handle on it. And so that's what this governor is trying to do. He's saying we no longer can afford to approach the state's problems with cosmetic fixes. A great example of a cosmetic fix were the furloughs that the previous governor required all state employees to take. All that did was push the problem on to now. It doesn't fix the problem. So what this governor is saying is, you know what, we should be in a spot where we can prioritize things like education, protecting citizens, and building infrastructure. But unfortunately, we're in such a hole. We're broke. The state is broke. Would we and my colleagues love to give these dedicated employees more? Yes. I mean, I have a lot of correctional facilities in my district, and I have toured them all. And I wouldn't want to do that job, and I don't know many people that would
want to
go through what they go through on a daily basis. We don't have the money.
But you're assuming, Professor Hopper, are you not? Correct me, or Senator.
I'm a professor now.
I keep talking to a lot of professors.
I'm teaching a lesson. This is fantastic.
Senator Hopper, you're assuming, aren't you, that those correction people and those teachers would not bargain in good faith on those issues because they don't have a sense of what the reality is. They know what's going on. They can sit at the table and talk about that, can't they?
You know, I appreciate you bringing up that point. The last budget contract that was attempted to be negotiated by the Doyle administration with a Democratic Senate and a Democratic Assembly took 18 months. To negotiate a contract with zero raise, zero cuts, zero, 18 months. The average time that it's taken to negotiate contracts has, in the last 10 years for state employee contracts, have been 15 months past the due date. In April, medical assistance is bankrupt. We don't have money to continue to operate our corrections and our corrections department. So we don't have 18 months. There were members of the I received a letter yesterday from a teacher who said to me they can't afford the contributions to health and they can't afford the contributions to pension and that they would be a disaster for them. Now, the letter was postmarked before last week. I've been having conversations with my public employee union members. You know, I didn't start last Tuesday when this all happened, and I didn't start, you know, 10 months ago. I started the day after I got elected and have worked with members of the corrections union, corrections officers union, on passing legislation that protects them. And members of my caucus wanted to make sure, yes, it's not part of collective bargaining for things like disciplinary or work safety. That's already just going to be built in. They just can't collectively bargain. But we want to make sure that workers are safe. I have reached out to the Secretary of Corrections and said to him, will this change the safety of the people that are working in our prisons? Because if it does, I won't be able to support. And he said, absolutely not. We're going to continue to have those weekly meetings with members to keep them safe. It is the priority of the Corrections Department. And so using the, you know, making sure that there are civil service protections for workers was something members of our caucus wanted to make sure they had. But when it comes down to bargaining, 2 weeks ago, I was told by people that I wouldn't stand a chance of reelection if I was going to support taking or requiring them to pay into their pension and their health care. So that changed in the course of the week, and because of what's being faced right now. So the ability or the wanting to sit down wasn't there prior to. we don't have the ability to go around. Then you would have to open up contracts negotiations at every municipality and every school in the state. It wouldn't be just a broad brush stroke, okay, everybody's going to agree, because there are different factions to negotiate with. And in the meantime, our state is completely out of money.
But you are going to have to negotiate with police and firefighters. And if you're looking at a city like Milwaukee, sure, that is a huge part of the budget.
Sure. And it's actually a large part of the budget with most municipalities.
Right.
In Oshkosh and Fond du Lac.
Sure.
And I understand that. And I think when the administration made the determination on pulling those out, it had a lot to do with, making sure the public was safe, and that the first responders would be, that process would not be interrupted. There's a history of dealing with those groups as separate entities in this negotiation process, and we needed to have those kind of protections available to the citizens. Because I was happy to support that, in that I think that protecting citizens ought to be one of the three priorities that we do in government.
Mm-hmm. When you say, and I need to go to phone calls, when you say that you were concerned about safety because you represent an area where there are prisons, considering the enormity of these protests, everybody says on every side they haven't seen anything like this in Wisconsin, and it may surpass anti-war demonstrations back in the 1960s. Is there concern among some Republicans that this has energized a Democratic base and that there is cause for concern about reelection? Or do you think that this is a small group of people when you look at the massive numbers of people in unions?
I mean, believe me, when all of this came to play, my name came up in a lot of conversations because I have more corrections facilities. I have two universities and two tech schools.
Mm-hmm.
And people said, well, this could mean politically you won't be reelected, or I've had threats on me personally. And I can promise you, I said before I got elected that it is more important to do this job than to keep this job. I believe the biggest benefits of what we're doing right now won't be seen in my political lifetime, whether it's in 2 years or 5 years. But just because I don't get instant gratification from a bill that I vote on, but it actually is generationally better for our state, doesn't mean I ought to not stand up and have the political courage to try to get that done.
All right, let's go to phone calls. Jeff in Winneconne, hi.
Hi. Let's find out where Governor Walker is. In Milwaukee, he fired a bunch of union security guards for his building and hired this WAC people. You probably remember these guys. These are the guys that had that just acted really weird over in Africa. They were having parties. They were drinking vodka out of orifices, and they had them all over the TV set. And what he did is he hired those guys, and then later on, he had to hire back the union security guards because he lost the case, and that cost the city of Milwaukee $430,000.
Are you familiar with this story? It was on.
Not familiar with it at all.
All right. It was a show. You'll I'm sure be updated during the day. It was a piece that was on MSNBC last night.
Okay. No, I can't comment on things going on in Africa right now.
It was a case of a British company, I believe, and the guy who was put in charge of security here turned out to be a felon. And it's a story that your staff will update you on, or you will,
okay,
I'm sure. When the governor said yesterday at his press conference, the private unions in this state play a key part in getting the state economy going, I wanted to hear more about what he meant by that. What does he mean by that?
I actually didn't see the governor's press conference. I was out meeting with constituents all day yesterday and into the night into my district, and honestly didn't have time to review it.
Okay. But when you look at private unions in this state, would we be better off, do you think, without any unions? Would it help the business climate?
No, it wouldn't. And I'm supportive of private unions. And you know what? I'm supportive of, this isn't about eliminating the unions, but this is about public employees. The governor, and I heard Senator Taylor, and said the governor didn't run on these things. The governor ran on getting Wisconsin's fiscal house in shape, which he needs to do to put us on the path to economic growth. I worked very closely with members of the Machinist Union in Fond du Lac in helping secure those jobs in Fond du Lac, and have had great friendships in working with them forward. But the public union and the private union, even Roosevelt, saw the difference between the two, as one is negotiating against the taxpayers, and the other is negotiating against private sectors. One is negotiating for things like discipline and safety rules, and those are covered under our civil service agreement. So there is a difference between the two. I think in the private sector they play a role. I think in the public sector they play a role, but they can't. We cannot afford to pay the benefit packages that have been promised in the past.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Paul in Rhinelander, hi.
How are you doing?
All right, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. And the first thing I want to do is salute the 14 Democratic senators who are doing their job and protecting all the people in Wisconsin. The second thing I'd like to point out to the senator, and I feel sort of bad for the senator because he says he's for unions, and this is not to destroy unions. I'm not sure if he understands what a union concept is and the unalienable rights they bring to the table for their workers. He better read up on what the legislature passed last year is on union history a little bit. What the unintended consequences are of the governor's budget, and I won't call him Hosea Walker like some of them do because I think that's disrespectful. What they've done with this and what he's done with this, and it doesn't look like the Republican Senate or Assembly has any input whatsoever, and I guess they're just in lockstep. What they've done is awoke a sleeping giant. The consequences will be the unintended of all the public employee union members that throughout the state, mostly in the north, who have been voting straight Republican tickets for all these years. Maybe they'll take a little look at it now.
All right, let's get a response. Senator Hopper.
Well, first, I proudly supported the union history bill that he referred to last time, so I actually did read it. When it comes to praising my colleagues in Illinois, you know, I think someone asked me the other day what I thought of the demonstrations in Madison, and my response is, this is what democracy is all about. It's a peaceful demonstration for the most part, and people ought to have the right to come and voice their opposition to what their government is doing. What I don't think is about democracy, and quite frankly think in making a mockery of it, is what my colleagues are doing in Illinois. For the last 2 years, I was in the minority, and I showed up every day and sat through bills that made my skin crawl and disagreed with them adamantly. In fact, in December, when the contracts were up for vote, I received calls from members who are outside this building, marching around this building, threatening me to tell me I had a duty to show up and vote because a rumor got around that the Republicans were going to leave town and block a vote from happening. And they told me you have a responsibility. Senator Jouk has a quote of saying you got to come and do your job. And so, I don't have any respect for my colleagues who are hiding out. I said that. I talked to Senator Taylor and told her that. Point blank, you know, just because what are we teaching our kids that are coming to see? Yes, you learn one lesson here is you can protest against your government. The other lesson is if there is a official election and you don't like the results, you can just run away to try to block what the electorate said. And so I want people to be careful about making heroes out of people that are literally making a mockery of democracy. And I told Senator Taylor that, and like I said, she's a friend of mine, but I think they ought to come back and do their job. People said, when is it going to change? And I said, when the constituents who are paying the salaries of the people who are in Illinois decide to tell them, you need to come back and go to work.
But people from the other side would say, and I'm sure you've heard this, Senator Hopper, that this was a momentous change affecting hundreds of thousands of people in the state of Wisconsin, and there simply wasn't enough time for all the public conversation that needed to take place.
In the last budget repair bill that Governor Doyle proposed, we received the budget repair bill when I was in the minority at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That night was the governor's budget address, so we were all at the assembly chambers listening to the governor's budget address. The next morning, we went to the floor of the Senate, and it passed along party lines less than 24 hours with zero public input, with not one hearing. I sat through 17 hours of hearings last week, not one hearing. Within 48 hours, it was signed into law, $1.2 billion, $1.2 billion with a B, dollars of new taxes on the private sector job creators in the state. We have a job crisis in the state. 150,000 people lost their jobs in Wisconsin in the last several years, and we need to get them back to work. And so the idea that this is being rushed through in some unprecedented form is a laughable hypocrisy on behalf of those people who are too cowardice to come do their job. And they ought to be ashamed of themselves, and they ought to be the ones that get voted out. You know, Senator Taylor said, we're just trying to stand up for the right. You're going to have an opportunity at the next election to voice your opinion, very similar to how you had the opportunity in last November. And we saw overwhelming support on behalf of people saying we need to change the fundamentals of how government operates. Government needs to operate within its own means, and we've got to stop borrowing from Peter or robbing Peter to pay Paul. We've got to stop using one-time fixes. We've got to stop being cosmetic in our approaches, and we literally need to fix it. Is that painful? Absolutely. It's painful. But it will get to the core of what will start to get our state moving in the right direction.
Yeah, you won. I understand. You won big time. I have one final question, and that concerns the budget, which will be announced next week. I would imagine, I don't know if you've had a chance to see it at all, but I think that we are concerned about what will happen in order to bring our fiscal house in order, that there will be substantially less money going to cities, municipalities, school districts in the state of Wisconsin. Are you worried that there will be massive layoffs of people once the budget is announced?
Let me just tell you this.
Okay.
If my colleagues in Illinois do not come back and we cannot address this problem, yes, there will be massive layoffs. No question about it. What the governor is trying to do right now is to prevent massive layoffs from happening. And how he's doing that is, you're absolutely correct in your assessment. This is a good indicator. There will be less money in shared revenue going to municipalities. There will be less money in K-12 education because we don't have the money. So what this budget repair bill is doing is giving the tools to those municipalities and those school districts the ability to effectively still balance their budget without having massive layoffs. If you look in places like New York with Democratic Governor Cuomo or California with Democratic Governor Brown, they are having massive layoffs and asking for the same kind of contributions that are happening with pension and health care benefits. What Governor Walker is trying to do is avoid people being put out of work.
And do you think that's possible with the budget, with that much less money going to all of those places, how can we escape layoffs?
Well, the idea is to give the municipalities the tools necessary to work within what they're going to be receiving from the state. I mentioned to you earlier just not requiring the school districts to use WIA Trust saves the school district $68 million across our state. Those are the kind of tools that are going to be necessary to give those districts the ability to balance their budget, knowing we have less money coming back. Listen, we don't have federal stimulus money to back us up the way it was used inappropriately 2 years ago. Because what happened was, you know, in that particular case, the member said, well, we made huge cuts and sacrifices. Well, when you cut $500 million out of K-12 education, then when the next budget comes around, you don't have that $500,000 because that $500,000 was then used to pay for another program. And then that money was supplanted with $1 billion in federal stimulus money. So now you're $1.5 billion more funds going to K-12 education that you no longer have available to you. It's kind of ironic that the people that drove our state into the ditch are sort of getting a free pass, and they're getting congratulated for sitting in Illinois saying, we know how to fix it. Well, you put us in the ditch. There's another group that's in here now that's saying we're willing to make the political tough choices to get our state out of the ditch. And so that's the plan of the governor, and that's the plan of the majority party.
Senator Hopper, I appreciate your time and your good spirits about this, too. Thank you. We'll be with you again. Senator Randy Hopper, Republican representing the 18th Senate District, on his way to his caucus. We thank Senator Lena Taylor for being with us, Senator Randy Hopper for being with us this hour of the program. Tomorrow we're going to switch our attention to the Middle East, where there are huge events taking place. We have yet to have a meaningful conversation about what's going on in Libya and certainly in Bahrain, so we will look at that international focus tomorrow. Thursday, during our 9 o'clock hour, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett will be joining us, and he has been, as you know, outspoken about dealing with police and firefighters who still retain their benefits and how difficult it will be for the city of Milwaukee to have a balanced budget while dealing with those benefits. And former Lieutenant Governor, Republican Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrell will be joining us on Wednesday's program as well. Entirely different topic as we talk about metaphors with an extremely interesting guest who's written a fascinating book. So that's coming up momentarily. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease for producing this hour. Thanks for all of your lively phone calls and interest in this subject. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network.